He entered the house of God. On taking the consecrated bread, he ate what is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is Lord of Sabbath." On another Sabbath, he went into the synagogue and was teaching, and a man there whose right hand was shriveled. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus. So they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. But Jesus knew what they were thinking and said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Get up and stand in front of everyone." So he got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it?" He looked around at them all and said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He did so, and his hand was completely restored. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were furious and began to discuss with one another what they might do to Jesus.
So a lot of people around us wait for Friday. One of the administrators at my work sends out very cheerful messages on Friday, which start, "Happy Friday." On a Saturday evening, on the streets of Cambridge, if you go out on the streets of Cambridge, Cambridge is full of revelers, as some of our friends call them. It can be difficult to get around town without coming across people out having fun at the weekend. But even if you aren't a reveler, the culture around us works on the assumption that weekends are really to be valued. The internet is full of advice for how to spend the weekend. Do a little bit of nothing. Spend time with family and friends. Exercise. Unplug from devices. Engage in something that you're passionate about, like a hobby. Volunteer for a charity. And sometimes, have a quick weekend getaway, said one site. So if that's the way the society around us thinks, what about Jesus' teaching? Jesus lived in a very different society to ours, but it was also a society with a very definite idea of rest and what rest means on the Sabbath. There were two ways in which Jews set themselves apart from the people around them physically. The first one was marked on their bodies, and that was circumcision. The second was marked out in their attitude to time, the Sabbath. So the Sabbath commandment was set out by God at creation in Genesis 2:2-3, which is up there on the screen. And I'm just going to read that. "By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." It was then repeated in the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20:8-11. "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." And elsewhere, in Exodus 35:1-3, Moses assembled the whole Israelite community and said to them, "These are the things the Lord has commanded you to do. For 6 days work is to be done, but the seventh day shall be your holy day, a day of Sabbath rest to the Lord. Whoever does any work on it is to be put to death. Do not light a fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day." So in the Mishnah, which is the Jewish oral tradition which the rabbis of Jesus' time had access to, they expanded on these sections of the Old Testament. There were 39 classes of work which were not allowed, such as plowing, hunting, butchering, and also, perhaps surprisingly, for those of us who don't live in an agricultural society, you couldn't tie knots or loosen knots, you couldn't sew more than one stitch, and you couldn't write more than one letter. Might be amusing to note for those of us who have children that you were not allowed to carry your children on the Sabbath. You weren't allowed to retrieve an animal who had fallen into a pit. So thinking back to Saturday night, what a contrast. If our culture sees Saturday as, well, a time to of consumption, of, you know, sort of pleasing yourself, of being self-centered, of having sort of fun out in town, the Pharisees and teachers of the law of Jesus' time took Saturday to be devoted to religion, to piety, to showing your religion in public. So imagine a Pharisee meeting a reveler out on the streets of Cambridge. They would really have very little in common. Yet, as Jesus confronts the Pharisees here in our passage, his message isn't about the specifics of what one should or should not do on a Saturday, the Sabbath. Nor is it a message about the specifics about what one should and shouldn't do on a day of ministry and Christian fellowship like our Sundays. Jesus totally changes the way the Jewish religious leaders saw the day of rest, the Sabbath, and he challenges us all as Christians as well about the way we see our day of rest as Christians, our Sundays. And additionally, one could say that he actually also has a message which challenges the people around us today, in the society around us today, and how everyone, people out there, people at church, see the weekend. Instead of setting up rules and routines about how to rest by being religious or by being decadent, maybe there isn't much of a difference between those two things in Jesus' eyes. Jesus points people to himself as Lord of the Sabbath. And that's where we're headed. But before we jump ahead, let's start with my first heading. Let's imagine this story for a little bit. A tale of two Sabbaths. A tale of two Sabbaths. So if you were here last week, you'll remember how Adam, our preacher, explained to us that Jesus' teaching about, Jesus' teaching about how the old and the new couldn't be stitched together. Where the old is the Old Testament law, which the Pharisees or Jewish leaders had expanded and took very rigorously and seriously. And the new was the amazing teaching of Jesus. Adam was telling us how if he had an old pair of jeans, which he used for DIY, it would be really ridiculous if he went out and bought a new pair of jeans and cut it up to mend the old pair of jeans. Luke 5, verse 36. No one tears a piece out of a new garment to patch an old one. Otherwise, they will have torn the new garment, and the patch from the new will not match the old. So this section of Luke, which we have before us this morning, comes just before Jesus spends the night praying and then choosing his 12 disciples. And it's part of a series of conflicts between Jesus and the Jewish leaders. At the start of his ministry, Jesus had been really very popular. For instance, in Luke 4:15, everyone praised him when he taught in the synagogue. Back in Luke 5:17, all over Galilee and Judea, the news of him had aroused an interest, and also amongst the people who were interested were these religious teachers. They were starting to view him with a critical eye. What a strange man. What a dangerous man, they were saying. The parables at the end of chapter 5, which we were looking at last week, were setting out the differences between Jesus and the Pharisees. And now these differences come out into the open. In chapter 6, Jesus throws down the gauntlet to the fault-finding Pharisees. And after our passage, he chooses his 12 disciples and then starts on this radically new way, which is opening up. So in the passage before us are two stories, which we're told happen on two different Sabbaths. Take one. Jesus is walking through the cornfields. So for those of us who live in a city, it can be difficult to imagine cornfields. And of course, we've had some very, very hot weather, which has affected all parts of the world. Here are some fields in Australia. The one on the right has been irrigated. And the one on the left, this is in New South Wales, just very recently in the last few weeks, has not been irrigated. And it's been a bit like that for people who are farmers. And here are sheep looking down aerially in parched Australian fields, getting their feed. And here are cornfields, not in Australia this time, dry in drought and lush in the midst of good weather. So Jesus was walking through cornfields. His disciples are hungry and pluck and eat some heads of grain. Now, wayfarers were allowed to help themselves to satisfy their hunger, according to Deuteronomy 23:25. But the problem is that this is the Sabbath. The Pharisees didn't allow this. Their law held that even to reap and grind corn no greater in bulk than a dried fig was illegal. So the smallest quantity of corn heads that the disciples ate broke the law. And it's even worse than that, because it seems that the disciples were violating the code of the Jewish leaders, not just on one count, but perhaps on three. It would have counted as reaping, threshing, and preparing food altogether, all of which was not allowed. So the question is aggressive in verse 2. Why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? In reply, Jesus gives two answers, and both of them, as we will see, are related. First, he says, think about David. Second, he says, I'm the Son of Man, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. So that's take one in the cornfields. Take two is set in the place of Jewish worship, the synagogue. Jesus is teaching, there's a man there, his hand is shriveled, probably some kind of muscular problem, perhaps something like this. And it's his right hand, the hand which at the time was given the most importance. The Pharisees are now cast really dodgily. They're keeping watch. They're on the lookout to make trouble for Jesus. They're only interested in accusation, not in doing good on the Sabbath. But Jesus knows what they're thinking. He doesn't bow down to the pressure of these watching eyes. Some of us know what it's like to be watched when we're doing something to see how well we're doing it or what we're going to do next. He doesn't really bow to the pressure of those watching eyes as we might do. Rather, he's bold. Verse 8. Get up and stand in front of everyone. And then again in verse 10. Stretch out your hand. So this is a really commanding teacher. Someone who has the power, who has power over the human body. He doesn't need to hide. The man is healed. Amazing for anyone who knows anyone who's disabled to even understand this passage. And his question to the Pharisees in verse 9 has no response. Notice the way that Jesus looks around in verse 10. There's silence. Then there's the fury of the Pharisees. They're plotting is the only response that they have to Jesus. So my second heading, religion versus following Christ. Let's think back to the creation story when the Sabbath was first set up. One implication of that, the fact that it's in the creation account, the 7-day week with 6 days of work and with 1 day of rest built in, is that it's really part of the created order. It's not merely a Jewish ritual, or, you know, an idea that the church came up with. Rather, it fits with what we're made for. Human beings need a rhythm, and this 7-day week is really perfect. God rested from his work in creation, and because humans are made in God's image, it's right that we take a day off. This day, according to the Old Testament, is a day for the Lord. Now, there's nothing in the stars or the moon or in astronomy that requires a 7-day week. Yet it's interesting to note that no society that has adopted a seven-day week has changed successfully to an alternative. Revolutionary France implemented a 10-day week intermittently between 1793 and 1805. The USSR experimented with a 5- and 6-day week between 1929 and 1932 in order to break the kind of Christian pattern, but it just didn't work out in the end. So no attempt to replace the 7-day pattern has, in a society which has already adopted it, no attempt then to kind of go to something else, has succeeded. Yet if there's a lot of wisdom in taking a day off, we need to be careful, because the lesson of the Pharisees is that they made it into too rigid a rule. It became a sign of their religion, their piety, rather than something which pointed back to God or which was dedicated to Him. We should remember that if not for the fall, there would be no work. The whole of human history would have been one long Sabbath. In heaven, there would be no need for a Sunday. It's from that perspective, then, that we should think about how the Pharisees objected to the way Jesus behaved on the Sabbath in these two stories. In take one, well, they're really not worried about human hunger. In take two, they're not worried about doing good or saving life. Look at what Jesus says in verse 9. Instead of dealing with hunger, they wanted to apply the letter and not the spirit of the law. And instead of healing a man, they wanted to accuse Jesus and catch him out. In other words, rather than do good, they were plotting destruction in the second story. It's almost as if Jesus is saying, it may be your kind of Sabbath to leave men hungry and disabled. My kind of Sabbath is different. Jesus' Sabbath and the life he calls us to is about relationships rather than rules. And this is one way in which following Jesus is different to what the Pharisees are up to. A strict or even expanded application of specific Old Testament laws isn't correct in Jesus' eyes, because they weren't intended to prevent people from having a meal or helping save people in need. The Sabbath, in Jesus' new way, is intended then to free humankind, to rest, to enjoy God, and not to prevent humankind from serving others or to prevent basic needs from being met. But this doesn't mean that we're totally free to do anything we want and to make ourselves kings of our rest or our Sabbath, to make our kind of rest self-centered. No, the rules are meant to point people to God and Jesus and to allow a life that brings Him glory in the service of others, in the pursuit of what pleases Him. So what does that mean in practice? Well, it means that it's right to come to church on a Sunday as a regular routine. At the same time, we should do so out of the freedom we have to worship and glorify God rather than as a ritual. If we can help people on a Sunday, practically or by cooking a meal for someone, well, that's perfectly consistent with a day of rest. If we're to run into someone in need of help on our way to church, or maybe even a non-Christian friend who we don't normally see on the street just as we're coming in, well, it's right to stop and help and to talk. Weekly church attendance is important for growth as a believer, but we should not judge someone who does or does not do something on a Sunday or look down on someone because of their Sabbath observance. When we come to church, we don't simply come to worship Christ individually, in our little bubbles, or to use contemporary language, in our echo chambers. Rather, we're here also to help others and to build relationships that will encourage each other in our walk with Christ. So our children have been on holiday, and I caught them, and I didn't ask them to do this, by the way, while preparing the sermon, playing church. So here are the Sylvanians at St. Matthew's Church. And I think the sort of bits of paper are the Bibles, and we're all standing on chairs, you'll be happy to know. The preacher is a hedgehog. And here is the creche. And there was also a youth group. Well, thankfully, this isn't church. Church is full of human beings rather than creatures who talk and interact and help each other in their communication and relationship with God. That's what we're designed for and which is fulfilled in the use of the Sabbath, to come to church. It's a really long way from Sylvanian church or even from Pharisee church. So both these stories show that keeping the Sabbath and loving our neighbor go together. To separate the two is hypocritical religion. To join the two is right at the center of the way that Jesus opened up. His teachings are really radical for the way they criticize empty religion. They point to heart-filled and spirit-filled faith instead. And it's that kind of faith that should be at the center of the way that we think about Sundays too, rather than specific guidance on what should and shouldn't happen, which may take away from relationships, including our relationship with God. But there's more to Jesus' teaching about the Sabbath. The third and final heading. The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. But Jesus wants us not only to change how we think about our day of rest, so that we don't think of a rigid set of do's and don'ts and so on. He wants us to realize who he is. The Sabbath is Jesus's. He is the Lord of the Sabbath. Let's read verses 3-5 again. Jesus answered them, "Have you never read, verse 3, what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the consecrated bread, he ate what is lawful only for priests to eat, and he also gave some to his companions. Then Jesus said to them, 'The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath.'" So the reference there is to 1 Samuel 21, 1-6. David was a fugitive, and he saw fit to take the loaves only to be eaten by the priests to satisfy his and also his companions' hunger. Those loaves were supposed to be set aside week by week by the law on the altar for the use of the priests. If then David acted in accordance with God's will, should not the Son of Man feed his disciples on the Sabbath? So the comparison with David is really important here, for David was Israel's greatest king and is seen in the Bible as the precursor of the Messiah, the Savior. It's from that line that the Messiah will come. So in comparing himself with David and then claiming for himself the title of Son of Man, Lord of the Sabbath, Jesus was showing himself to be King of Kings. So in a few moments, we'll be sharing bread and wine in communion. But as we do so, the bread we share will be different to the bread which David took from the temple. For the bread we share is a sign of how Jesus died for us when his own body was nailed on the cross, something David just did not do, could not do, because he was not without sin. Luke's first use of Son of Man just happened a bit before in Luke 5:24. The Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. And then Son of Man appears here in our passage next. So the Son of Man as a title points to how Jesus is the Son of God who can forgive sins. And as he forgives our sins, he heals us and gives us rest. So because of Jesus' death and resurrection, we can rest. We can take to him all our troubles, our weaknesses and failings, and find comfort in his death. The purpose of the Sabbath then can't be understood simply as a set of rules, because Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath. What does this mean? Yes, we need to have a day of rest. Yes, we need to come to church and see Sundays as for the Lord. Yes, we need to look out for our neighbor and to build relationships. At the same time, because we live in the light of Jesus' death, we can find true rest in him. Our daily routine, including Sundays, is an act of worship. His forgiveness of our sins, his ability to feed and heal us, the two things that he does in this passage, but now through his body and blood, should totally change the way we see the pressures of this world. Jesus calls us to rest as the Lord of the Sabbath.